Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio show. My guest for this morning is award-winning short story writer Michael Schiavone. His debut novel, titled Call Me When You Land, is about a compelling family drama, motherhood, troubled relationships, struggling toward repair, and possible redemption from unlikely sources. Michael and I will be discussing about his life's journey and his debut novel. Good morning, Michael. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
Good morning, Johnny. Glad to be in the kitchen with you.
Fantastic. Love to have you in the kitchen with me. Call Me When You Land is a wonderful read. It captured the spirit of despair and love in true emotional honesty. It's a wonderful book. I believe, though, on the other hand, it's a little bit heavy for people to read. But however, I think to some, it will awaken their sort of long slumber that they have had. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Let us start by getting to know you a little better. Please give us a walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
Childhood to present. Okay. Well, that's 37 years. I was born in Connecticut, went to high school in Connecticut, went to college in Pennsylvania. After college, I moved to San Francisco where I worked in finance. And that was during the late 90s when the market was doing really well, especially the technology sector. So it was a very exciting time to be working in that industry. Around 2000, I left San Francisco and moved to Boston, closer to where I'm from, New England. And I stayed in the same industry working on the East Coast. And times were a little more challenging in the industry. Everyone wasn't as friendly because people were losing money. And I started to just get a little distaste for the whole enterprise. So I was just kind of figuring out what to do next. So me and my girlfriend, who is my wife now, we packed our bags and moved west again to Santa Fe, New Mexico. And there we got four dogs from an animal shelter. I worked at a bar. She actually worked at the animal shelter, which is why we have four dogs. And we hung out there for a few years, and we also went to Phoenix, too, for about a year. Then we came back here. I'm in Gloucester, Massachusetts, which is just north of Boston. We came back here about 4 years ago, and we have a two-and-a-half-year-old son now. And all along, you know, while I was working in finance or working in the bars or, you know, I've had a lot of silly odd jobs in between, I have been writing, you know, off and on since I was about 22 years old. So for 15 years, you could say, I've been writing. Not, you know, I'm not one of those people that gets up and writes 4 hours a day, every day without fail. It just doesn't work that way. But I have been consistent on the whole and, you know, in terms of production. So I live out here now. I work on an ambulance as an emergency medical technician and raising our son and having a good time.
Fantastic. What were the source of inspirations behind your writings? Because obviously you've won some wonderful awards for your short stories.
Well, I'd say all of my writing would be about relationships. I'm really not interested in plot-driven narratives. That doesn't mean I don't like to read them. Doesn't mean I don't like to watch television shows. It's just, it seems when I sit down to write, you know, it always comes down to two people sort of engaged in a conflict. Even if I sit down to write a fantasy story, it won't come out. It'll be about two people engaged in a conflict, whether it's a marriage or brothers and sisters, friends, any situation like that. I guess I'm very drawn to just human interaction and what isn't spoken rather than what is spoken, sort of the secrets that lie underneath sort of our everyday conversation. So those kind of little mysteries there, those sort of domestic mysteries intrigue me, and that's sort of where I always end up. So, you know, I have a lot of stories, and they take place in various locations and various personalities, but you could really recognize the theme in all of them is character interaction, reaction, and growth or potential for growth.
Mm-hmm.
Not always a happy ending in my stories, but I don't think they're meant to depress people. I just try to find sort of the honesty within. And I think when I talk about potential, that to me is hopeful. If there's potential, mm-hmm. there's hope. So it doesn't necessarily mean that, well, you know, we found gold at the end of the rainbow, you know, every time. But at least we, you know, we've something's changed and now we might be able to fix this. So that's, I guess, characters is what intrigues me.
I understand that. I've not read any of your short stories or anything like that, but based on what I've read in your novel, it seems like you have a lot of information to give, and it's a long thought-out process that you go through in putting things on paper. So my question is that, do you use your short stories over the years as an escape outlet to express yourself?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, sometimes, though, it's not an escape because, honestly, I find it a very, very difficult thing to do. It's not something I sit down and smile and get ready to do because it's a difficult thing because you're alone in a room, you got a blank page, and you kind of have this despair because, you know, you have to come up with something. And if not, you've wasted 4 hours sitting in a room when you could be outside, when you could be a productive member of society, but no, you're holed up in your room trying to figure something out. So there's a lot of pressure to create something when you sit down. So I guess what I'm saying to you is, so while it's working, when I hit a stride, it's wonderful. It's a total escape, and there's nothing I'd rather be doing. But the reality is the majority of the time that I'm working on writing in the room alone, it's a struggle. But I think for those fleeting moments of, you know, when I am finding my rhythm and I've discovered the story and my characters, when I hit those, it makes all that struggle, you know, totally worth it. So that's sort of just how it goes. And I think you could ask, you know, a lot of, you know, not any, all writers are going to understand that. So it is an escape because it's like it's just not a very, it's a very kind of lonesome pursuit, although it feeds you in other ways because you're, I guess, enabling all these kind of thoughts you might have had or things you might have heard that all of a sudden come out because, and surprise you. I guess that's what it is you could end up surprised, which, you know, is nice, and that's what it's about, is being surprised.
So what's the inspiration behind Call Me When You Land?
Well, that's pretty complicated question, but I could start by saying the inspiration started for me. I knew I wanted to write a longer work, and so I had to sort of think about what's going to, you know, first you have to think about what is the story's occasion. That's how it was put to me by a teacher long ago. Why are we telling this story now? So I was kind of sitting in front of the page, this is back in 2007, going, okay, what's going to happen right now? Something has to happen to start this story to create these characters and et cetera. So for me, what I started with was an image of a pod, which I'll explain to people who don't know, is a large box that you can rent to help you move. In other words, if you're moving, like when we moved from Arizona to Massachusetts, we rented a pod. And this truck delivers this giant box, drops it in your driveway, and you fill it up with all your possessions. And then that they'll come back, pick up the container, and drive it to wherever you're moving to. So I was sort of, for whatever reason at that time, you know, that image of a pod sitting in someone's driveway stuck with me. And I imagined it, you know, it's also a mystery. What is inside these boxes that you might see across the nation in people's driveways? So I actually started the story, the entire novel, with that simple image in mind, not really sure where it would go. I don't really try to reach. I just sort of start simple and one step at a time. So I had the image of this pod arriving at this person's house, and them not knowing what was inside. So that was sort of the genesis. And from there, that simple start, came the people inside the house, came what was inside the pod. Everything started from that. That's where it was born. And you, it sounds simple, but you really need that first image or spark to get going, because you can't, it's imperative, because it's really your, it's your launching point. And without that, you could end up writing 100 pages and you're flat. You don't really know where you're going or what you're starting from. But that really did it for me, sort of that image.
Very interesting. It is a painstaking, real story that you told in the book, and it's very interesting to whereby, sadly enough, it is relatable to many parent-child relationships. Does that motivate you? You're very, very thorough. And so I'm just wondering, what is the motivation behind the entire process?
The motivation to write the story, or the motivation to write these specific characters?
Let's start with the book first, and then we'll break down to the various characters.
Okay, so why did I decide to write this book?
Yeah.
Well, let's start from a practical standpoint. As a writer, as a fiction writer, and if you want to call it literary fiction, it's a difficult market. It's not easy to get published for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So what I've learned over the past 15 years is, you know, short stories, even when they are getting published and, you know, you're getting paid and you're, you know, acquiring a name for yourself, which is great, isn't what the marketplace is after in terms of a career, if you want to even call it that. But so in other words, an agent wants you to write a novel. A publisher wants a novel. Very few of them are going to sort of sign you on because of a short story collection, unless you have a big name already, unless you have some connections. Otherwise, it's difficult. So I was sort of felt pressed to finally write a novel after doing stories for so many years. You know, I felt, all right, I need to do a novel, then I need to get an agent, and then I need to get published. You know, I just need to be established. It sort of felt like I had to do this. Even though I wasn't, you know, I was always sort of thought about writing a novel, but it's just, it's such a, it's such a big deal. I mean, it's just a really big undertaking. So I was motivated because I sort of wanted to step out of my comfort zone. I was trying to, you know, just break a little bit away from the short stories, which, you know, I started to find some success with after 10 years of struggle.
Yeah.
So once I sort of found some success with that, I decided, all right, let's, you know, let's take it up a notch and see what we can do. So I was determined to write this novel. And at the same time, I remember I was unemployed, so I had a lot of time on my hands. I was really trying to fill that fill that time, you know, because, you know, so it was really perfect because I had 6 months, I remember, and I was writing daily, 4 to 6 hours every day. And that's what got this book down. And, you know, and that book did get me an agent, and that agent did, you know, sell it. So it worked. And that was the motivation. But I'll tell you, it was, writing a book to me is still a lot harder than writing short stories. And, you know, people differ on that. But I think a book's really difficult.
Why did you choose this topic?
You know what I would say, and not to sound corny, but the topic chose me because, as I was mentioning earlier, I didn't intend, I don't outline, so, you know, a lot of people make an outline. I know some novels that have, know exactly where they're going to go before they even start to write the book. And I'm not like that. There is no outline. There's really, there's some ideas, but they're hardly realized before I start. So it comes to me as I write. This, everything that happens in this book comes to me as I write. It's part of the process. So you have to be, or I have to be, you know, patient, and I have to be trusting that the book will come to me, the characters will reveal the book to me, not the other way around. And you could tell the difference, I think, if you're forcing something out of a story that's not really organic to that story. So I think these people, this mother, this son, this situation, the side characters, all of them came about on their own through, whether it's my unconscious, subconscious, I do not know. Mm-hmm. But it comes through the process of writing, through the sort of painstaking, tedious process of sitting there and staring at the page wondering, what am I doing? And it does eventually show up, you know, if you're in line, if you have put in the time and put in, you know, the effort to get there. So that's what I would say is that it came to me rather than me sort of going after that subject. Mm-hmm. It must have been there all along.
You write very well. You're writing about Katie, for example, from a 39-year-old woman's perspective about her challenging life is totally outstanding. How did you put yourself in her shoes?
I think every character, and definitely Katie, who's the protagonist, I have to relate to them. Otherwise, mm-hmm. I think you'd see right through it as the reader. And I relate to every character to some extent, no matter who they are, mm-hmm. in my books and my stories. But Katie is just an incredible combination of people and personalities that I know, or that I've invented, actually. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's some of me in there. There's some of my mother in there. There's some of a guy from work in there. I mean, it's just that random of a collection of personality traits, mm-hmm. That create this one woman. You know, she represents a lot of different people and ideas that have passed through my mind over the past, you know, couple years as I was
sure.
writing the book. So she's very relatable to me because, as you know, a book takes a long time to write. And so as so even the days you're not writing, you're thinking about these characters. You're going to think about them daily in different situations. So you really get to know them. So mm-hmm. I know her as, you know, it got to a point where, you know, after a while, I didn't have to think about her when I wrote her. She wrote herself because I had her down. I knew what she wanted. I knew what she didn't want. And I learned about her. You know, I had to mm-hmm. learn about her mm-hmm. through... There's a lot of scenes that aren't in there anymore. There's a lot of things I wrote mm-hmm. that I had to write to get to the final product.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I got to know her intimately, and that's how I got to know everyone in there. So, you know, some people have said, well, that's, you know, how do you understand a 39-year-old woman, you're a 37-year-old man? But to me, and also, let's keep in mind, I didn't write this from the first-person point of view, which I think
right.
would have been a little strange. Some people do
yeah.
that, but I choose, if I'm going to write a woman, I'm not going to write from first-person. So
sure.
there's a little narrative distance there. And to me, it's just honestly, the gender doesn't really matter
mm-hmm.
at all. Like, it's really about the character's honesty, whether man, woman, child, it doesn't really matter. So...
Mm-hmm.
She just happened to be a woman. She ended up being the protagonist. I didn't set it out that way. But, you know, I knew she was the right choice right away, like right when I found her. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, and I could, and that's, yeah, so I relate to her because I grew with her through this entire experience. You know, I went through it with her,
mm-hmm.
you know. So I lived it in a way, you know.
Fascinating. Your book speaks about alcoholism, bottled-up frustration, self-confidence, all laced up with love, which generated compassion, courage, and human survival. How much of these have you really witnessed? I mean, you talk about the fact that it's a little bit of you, a little bit of your mom, a little bit of the co-workers that you've encountered over the years.
Yeah,
how
friends,
much of these?
Family.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's everybody. I mean, honestly, though, a lot of it's made up. You know, a lot of it, like I said, is I don't know where it's coming from.
Yeah.
You know, like there's a loose basis to real personalities.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm always throwing in, you know, make believe either
right.
to suit my narrative purposes or just to make them more interesting, because that's just how it is. This is, you know, a book people are reading. So it's like some real people aren't always that interesting. So I have to make things up.
Yeah.
But with that said, you know, when you make things up, they have to sound like they're true. And the only way that can happen, I think, is the author has to believe it and the author has to know what they're talking about. So, of course, I'm not going to, you know, for example, the motorcycle, there's a motorcycle in the novel. You know, I couldn't have done that 5 years ago because I didn't know anything about motorcycles. So I learned a lot about motorcycles, and that enabled me to sort of have some confident prose writing about them.
Sure.
You know, and I think the themes that are in this book, you mentioned alcoholism, you know, I think every family probably in America can, in the world, can knows someone that has struggled with addiction, is familiar with addiction. I mean, it's on TV all the time now. You have the show Intervention. So addiction's been around forever. It's not like I'm, you know, uncovering something new. But, you know, I am familiar, you know, with it. So I was able to use that in order to show Katie, you know, to show how she dealt with it. And then, you know, it's a family saga in many ways, and everyone lives in a family. So that's, you know, it's a personal experience because I know what that's like. And so I guess what I'm trying to say is it's comes from experience, but it also comes from observation. I think I'm really, one thing I've always done is I like to eavesdrop and I like to listen to people. And I think I could, when I do that, you know, and it turns into my work because it's not my experience, it's somebody else's, a stranger's perhaps, but I could turn it into my own. I could make it these characters. So a lot of what happens in this book has not happened in my life, but it almost feels like it has because I've, you know, spent so much time on it. So really, it's I'd say a 50-50 mix. The themes are from personal experience, and they're also from just observing and listening.
Wonderful. Give us a quick synopsis of your book.
Trying to do that without... Sometimes, like, a lot of the pre-publication reviews have given a lot away, and I know that's, like, disappointed, like, a few people. But basically... you have a mother and son living in coastal New England. The father is missing in action, and the story starts with his death. So he's been estranged from his teenage son for about, I believe, his whole life almost, and the son's now 15. So the story starts with that death, and then the father, in his last, you know, his will, left something to the son, which arrives in the pod. And like I was mentioning earlier, that sort of, that generates the story. This pod arrives, you have a single mother living with her teenage son. They're already sort of tense with each other. And then this item arrives from his estranged father. So a lot of emotions now come right to the surface. Also living in this house with the mother and son is an ailing great uncle of the mother. His name is Walter, and he offers a lot of insight, balance, temperance between these two. I really liked him as a character, and I liked inserting him into the house because, you honestly, I had to have somebody in the house with them because otherwise it just, I think it would have just blown up. You know, you needed almost a referee in there. You have this kind of dysfunctional family living together on three separate floors of a house and now dealing with the past sort of coming right in their faces with the father, the estranged father's death and the gift that he's left his son. And this gift is, you know, it's a motorcycle. So I don't know if I should reveal that, but I already did. And that sort of, you know, what mother would want a motorcycle coming to the house with a 15-year-old temperamental teenager living there? You know, that's not good. It's like a recipe for disaster. But that's the exact kind of disaster I want to invite to this family, to these characters, so that I can you know, really bring everything that's been simmering. I feel like when the story starts, the conflict between all these characters has been simmering. And now, from page one, we're going to sort of blow the top off, see what happens, go through hell, and then hopefully come out of it. So there's a lot of small specifics that, you know, I won't get into, but it really is about, again, as I said earlier, the characters adapting to a new and stressful situation and sort of seeing how they do. You know, I throw them into the fire and see how it goes. And for me, it comes out well. You know, I've had a few people write in some reviews or what have you that they weren't sure how it ended. And it's funny because I always feel optimistic at the end. That was my intention. It ends well, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. It did. So what would you like for your readers to gain from reading Call Me When You Land?
Well, I would say that's up to the reader, and what I mean by that is I don't write it with an audience reaction in mind. Of course I want the book to be embraced. Of course I want it to be liked. I'd be lying if I said otherwise. But, you know, really my aim is to be honest and to write honestly. So that's what I'd like them to take away from it. So if someone, you know, doesn't like it, that's okay. You know, I don't think a lot of people are going to like this because it's, mm-hmm. you know, it might be a little dark. That's mm-hmm. And I mention that because I've seen some comments about it being dark.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the only kind of story I know how to write. So I guess I want them, you know, I hope they find it a thoughtful book because I did, you know, I really tried to grind every ounce of humanity out of these characters. I really tried to make them as real and as accessible as possible. And they're not always attractive, but, you know, I think they're real. So I would really, I'd rather someone say, well, that was really real, but I didn't like it, than someone say, oh, you know, I loved it because I liked your prose. You know, I'd rather them mm-hmm. respond more to a visceral reaction that they appreciated the, you know, they recognize something in that, like all the comments that I've seen. And when I mention comments, I'm talking about websites like Goodreads mm-hmm. and other mm-hmm. places that have had advanced reader copies mailed out and they've responded. So I have seen a pretty wide, a large amount of responses. And a lot of people did say, wow, I recognize what I love the most when people recognize the mother-son struggle, when they sort of recognize women, you know, that mm-hmm. have raised boys, when they recognize that and it really is poignant for them, that to me is the best because that's really the heart of it is those two. Mm-hmm. And capturing that sort of grim, strange time of, you know, puberty and just everything like that. And so when people respond and recognize the characters and the situations and can apply them to their own lives or their pasts if they're reading them as they're older, that's to me what's most rewarding versus anything else. Absolutely.
You mentioned just now something very interesting. You are driven towards the dark side characters and so forth. That's what you know how to write. It's almost like the Star Wars, you know, the dark side.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a reason for it? I mean, did you experience something in your life that sort of make you think differently?
So why am I so screwed up? Is that what you're asking?
No, not at all. I mean,
no, I'm kidding.
I don't think it's sort of a screwing up in life. It's just very
yeah.
interesting, fascinating, because there's a lot of depth in your writing.
Yeah, I can't. I haven't overanalyzed that point. You know, I haven't figured out why, you know, that's sort of where I go. Remember I was mentioning earlier, like I could try and try to write something else, but it will always come down to some sort of dark, pivotal conflict between characters. That's what mm-hmm. it's going to come down to, no matter what I do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everyone I have a writer's group that I've met with on and off for 10 years, and they all write the same way, too. And, you know, we're very different people. In fact, we're not even, we don't see much of each other outside that writer's group. So we have our own separate lives, varying backgrounds, but we all sort of write the same sort of,
mm-hmm.
we're in the same field. Our stories are different, but we write the same way. And I don't think, you know, it's easy to say, well, something must have happened, or why are they attracted to this or that? But if you mentioned Star Wars, I was always more attracted to the Darth Vader angle than, you know, the other side. I was really,
right.
That whole father-son was just always just so captivating to me. Like, that to me was the best part of Star Wars, way more than sort of the action scenes. And, I mean, I love the whole movie, but I really love the father-son relationship. So, and that's from being a little boy. So, absolutely, that complicated, dark relationship between Luke and Anakin Skywalker is intriguing, as is the relationship between Katie and CJ. There's a lot of darkness. There's a lot of unsettled business. And you really hope for redemption, you know, for those type of situations. And that's what I've tried to create. And that's, so I'm attracted to the dark side, but I don't want to stay dark and dismal. You know, I don't I'm not trying to just end a story gloomily. I'm just trying to describe it how it really is. You know, there's what you see, and then there's what's really happening. You know, when two people walk by each other and they say, how you doing? No one says, I'm awful. I am terrible. I am so depressed. You don't really hear that. It's just sort of, I'm fine. How are you? You know, it's like an automatic response. So I just sort of want to cut through that and see what's really going on inside of someone. And the only way to do that is to examine them, and that's what I'm able to do when I write.
Do you observe a lot of people and just be sort of perpetual observer?
Yeah, I definitely would say that. I love drama. Like, I love when I see, like, two people fighting at a cafe or yelling at each other. I love hearing, especially now with cell phones, it's great because you could hear people having these, they think when they're on the phone, they're in their own little world, but they're in public. So you could hear all this stuff going on. And it's just, it's wonderful. Like, I could just hear all these gory, intimate details of their life. And it's just, it's great. You just sit there and take it in. So, like, the sense of privacy when you're, people, I'm on the phone, it's private. But, no, you're actually in the world. You just don't know it. And, you know, and people like me are listening to you and, you know, are intrigued by you.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, like I said, a lot of the book is coming from strangers. A lot of the characters are coming from strangers that I've seen or just witnessed, and, you know, in that kind of observation, whether it comes, you know, it could be in simple things, you know, sitting on an airplane is interesting, you know, watching how people behave, you know, and then, you know, watching people behave badly is always fascinating. So, or people coming unglued, you know, just sort of, and that happens every day. You just have to look for it.
Interesting. So how do you react yourself at home? I mean, with your wife, Abby, and, of course, your son, Colton.
Yes.
How does that translate to the fact that you like the sort of, as we speak, the dark side, sort of the other flip side of the coin, so to speak? And how does that relate to your relationship with your family?
here's what's good. If I write and I'm in my room,
mm-hmm.
that's sort of where it can all take place. I really don't try to dwell on that all the time. I mean, that's just, you know, I'm a very active person. So
yeah,
I'm, you know, always, you know, doing, I'm always like, I'm very, I have a lot of energy. So I'm always trying to do something. So in the house, you know, we're not sitting around and just being dark and weird. You know, I'm taking my two-year-old to the playground. You know, we're going to go apple picking. We're going to do all sorts of things. I mean, just having a family really, you don't have as much time to sit around and dwell. So, because you're so busy, you're so preoccupied, you're so concerned with more than yourself. So, I'd say, you know, writing is what gives me the ability to channel sort of or deal with or tolerate sort of those dark, uncomfortable feelings, like those things that could sort of maybe obstruct your life, you know, can be dealt with in a positive way. And I mean, that must, you know, I'm sure that's what brought me to the keyboard in the first place is, you know, I could go lift weights and I could go jog, but that really doesn't change. I haven't really channeled sort of the thoughts inside my head, and I think writing and putting all those thoughts into the characters has allowed that release. Because, and you could ask my wife, you know, I'm pretty grumpy when I'm not writing for a while because I get very down on myself.
Right.
You know, even if I don't want to write, I still feel there's a guilt because I just feel I should be. So, you know, my health as a writer is very important. So it's, you know, like I say, for 15 years, it's a struggle because sometimes you're doing it, sometimes you're not. And, you know, and you just have to trust you'll do it again, because right now, like, I haven't been doing much writing, partially because I have this book coming out and there'll be some promotion involved and I sort of have to focus on that. And I'm not used to that. So I'm not really in the writing mode right now. So I do feel a lot of kind of guilty feelings, you know, that I'm not creating new stuff. I'm sort of talking about this, but it is, it's a, you know, to get to your point is like, I, you know, these, it's a, the topics are dark or they're, you know, even some might say disturbing, but they're real topics that are in my head anyway. So if I don't write them down, they're going to be here. So I might as well write them down.
Do you take that out when you do your mixed martial arts?
Well, I haven't. The mixed martial arts I've had to put, I had to take a break from because I don't, one, I was getting hurt all the time. And so, and two, since I've had a child, it's kind of been difficult to manage time-wise, you know, between work and trying to write and, you know, spending time with family. It just, it's kind of gotten in the way. So I miss it because I haven't done it since June. But like I say, I keep physically active. I go to the gym almost every day, and I walk my dog. So I'm always active. But maybe, I'm getting older too, so I don't know if I'll be able to go back to the mixed martial arts. But I always tell myself I'll go back in a few years when my son's a little older. But by then I'll be 40, which is like ancient in that world. So we'll see.
Where can someone go to buy your book, get more information about you, and keep up with your latest happenings?
Well, the book, as of this second, is still not out. It's out in October, which is obviously this month.
Yeah.
But my publisher is messing with my mind and will not give me an exact date yet. So it could be out this afternoon. It could be out next week. So you can pre-order it on Amazon. That's always been available. You can pre-order it on any of sort of those online vendors, Barnes & Noble, Borders, whatever you fancy. Now, to keep up, I'm very, you know, diligent about maintaining my website, so which is michaelschiavone.com. I always have links there. I have updates, whatever. If anyone's interested at all, they can check there and they can find out whatever they want. I'm available by email, which is also listed on the website. So the book will be made available on Kindle and other sort of, what do you call it, digital readers once it is released, the hardcover is released. So plenty of places to buy it. I already have it pre-ordered on Amazon, so hopefully it's here any day.
Fantastic.
And then it will be at the bookstores, you know. And if it's not at the bookstore, you could, of course, if you don't want to do the online thing, you know, just ask your bookseller to order it, done and done.
Wonderful. How has writing this novel impacted you personally?
Well, it's changed this, like, for example, this whole process that I'm doing, this promotional aspect, that was never really there before. Like, with short stories, you didn't really have much of a platform. And since this book's come out and I have a publicity firm I've hired to help me with this part of it, and that's changed everything because now I've had to, I'm somewhat introverted, so it's been you know, I've had to promote myself, which is really kind of difficult sometimes. It's awkward. So mm-hmm. I've, you know, to do that has, you know, made me just sort of, you know, just, I don't know, it's been very new, let's put it that way. You know, I'm going to have to do a book reading, and I'm going to have to do some interviews, and I'm going to have to do this and that, which I'm, you know, very happy to do, and I feel fortunate that I'm able to do it. Mm-hmm. But it is a challenge at the same time, because it's just, it's the other side of the writing business that I never had the privilege to think about, because mm-hmm. most writers, you know, we're alone. We're not out promoting our books and on the road, because that's a rare luxury. So that's very new. And it's otherwise, you know, nothing's really changed. I'm the same writer. Like, I don't have any new agenda, nothing like that. Like, when I do sit down and write again, it'll be the same, you know. And I don't know whether I'm going to do a novel or a short story. It depends what happens when I sit down again. But my agent would like a novel, of course. But we'll see whatever happens when I sit down. We'll see what comes out.
Interesting. As an award-winning short story writer and a novelist, what advice can you give to aspiring writers and novelists?
Whew, that's tough. I mean, being an aspiring writer and novelist is a tough racket. I mean, especially if that's all you're clinging to. I mean, when I was in my early 20s, I actually thought I could move to New York and be a writer. Like, that was in my brain. I thought that would be that simple. I would live in New York and write, and there you go. But, you know, it really doesn't work that way, and I realized that once I got a job. And once I realized that people aren't just buying manuscripts and fiction isn't some booming business unless you're one of the select few mm-hmm. That can actually make a living on it. Even, like, writers that I look up to and admire and I think are wicked successful, they have day jobs. I mean, you know, these are the rock stars to me. You know, they have other lives. They have, you know, other stuff going on. And I think for two reasons that's important. Now, let's say I had this book become a bestseller. Let's say they made it a movie. Now, none of that's going to happen. But, and I got all this money, and I could sort of live on it. I don't know if I could live like that, though, as in just writing mm-hmm. without having sort of the daily experience of living. And what I mean by that is having a job, having sort of the stress of a job, having sort of the, you know, that kind of grind to be part of, you know, the world, because otherwise you're sort of living in a bubble. Mm-hmm. So I think I would say to anyone that's trying to write, you got to have perspective. You got to have a life also. You can't just write, especially, like, when I think back to when I was 20, 21, you don't, depending on the kind of life you've led, you don't really have any perspective yet. At least I didn't, and I think most people I know didn't. So it takes some sort of, you have to have some failures, I think. You have to have some challenges. And I think to just go to, you know, you graduate high school and go to college and major in English and then go get your master's in fine arts and then you're 25 and you haven't done anything yet, your writing's going to show that. You know, your writing's going to, you know, and that could be a big disappointment. So, and I didn't want to hear that when I was in my early 20s, you know, but I remember one of my professors said to me, I said, oh, I want to apply to this master's program. He's like, get a job.
Yeah.
And I was like bummed out by that because I still thought, oh, I am going to get a job and be a writer, but you can't just go out and be a fiction writer. There's no posts in the newspaper looking for fiction writers, I assure you. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I would say, I also tell people have a backup plan because you certainly can't count on it financially, and mentally I think it's good to have something else going on in your life, and it doesn't mean you're not a writer, but it just means that, you know, give yourself a break because it's way too hard to take too seriously, and we've all done it, and we've all paid for it, you know, by doing that. So,
yeah.
It's tough. I wouldn't recommend it to anyone. Like, you really have to want to do it. And if you really want to do it, you'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the bottom line. I mean, I think a lot of people might... I know a lot of people that want to be writers that don't write, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Real writers write, and not many of them find sort of the success they'd like, but they keep writing. So they have to. That's why.
Do you feel that your diverse work experiences contributed to your writing as well?
Absolutely. There's no doubt in my mind. Like, that's, I mean, I didn't, when I graduated college in 96, I didn't set out to have 20 different jobs like I've had. I had no idea the roller coaster I was in for, and I wouldn't have wanted that. If someone said, all right, you're going to live here, 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 you're going to be in this industry, that industry, this industry, and I'd be like, oh, that sounds stressful. I don't want to do that. But that's what ended up happening, because I'm a pretty restless person. So I'd get a job, and then all of a sudden I'd feel trapped, and so I'd move. But all of that definitely, you know, to me, contributes to the work, because it gives me a level of authenticity on many subjects, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's key, because I don't think you can, you know, BS people. Like, you know, I don't think you could. You really have to understand, if you're creating a character's job, you really have to understand that job, because somebody that's reading it that might have done that job is going to know if you're lying. They're going to know if you haven't really done that.
Mm-hmm.
And good writers are also good liars, you know. They're able to at least they're able to at least relate to someone that's been through something, even if they haven't done it. So for me, you know, because I've had a lot of different jobs, and a lot of them have been weird jobs, and I've witnessed a lot of different people, different socioeconomic backgrounds, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I've worked with rich people, and I've worked with poor people, you know, and I've had blue collar, I've had white collar. So that, I think that's really offered me a ton of perspective. And it's enabled me to have my sort of hand in a lot of different places, you know, and so that's definitely informed my work, you know, and I'm grateful to that. But again, if I knew 15 years ago I'd be on that kind of road, I would have been freaked out. You know, I just like now I don't want to do anything different again. I don't ever want to move, you know.
But right.
That's just how it is.
What can we expect from you in the coming months?
Well, in the coming this next month or two, I will be pounding the pavement, so to speak. I will be doing what I can under the guidance of my publicist, promoting this book, learning how to promote a book, doing whatever it takes to promote a book. I'll be driving throughout the New England area, New York, and going to bookstores that will have me to do signings and meet and greets. Again, I did hire a publicist, and they've helped facilitate all of this.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't have done it on my own. So I'll be out and about. Once this book's out, if it comes out this afternoon, I'll be on the road tomorrow. I'll be, you know, I'm not terribly comfortable with promotion. I'm learning to get comfortable. But here's the thing. I have to do it. I have to, because I put in so much, you know, work and sweat into writing the book, that this part's really necessary, you know, even though I'm not so keen about it. I have to do it, you know, because I feel my book deserves it, because to do all that work and not promote it, you know, 10 years from now, I might say, shoot, you know, I should have been a little less stubborn. I should have been a little more outgoing, you know, because you never know. This might be it. So it's a rare opportunity. I need to remind myself to be grateful, you know, because, you know, there's been a lot of lonely moments the past 15 years writing where I didn't think anything like this would ever happen, you know, and it has happened. So I have to remind myself of that. I forget. So I'll be on the road. I'll be online. I'll be on Facebook. I'll be on all those places trying to get the word out. I'll be doing radio shows, blog radio shows like this. You're my first, so this is very exciting for me. And I'm available, you know, if people want to contact me. I'm a very accessible person. I'll talk to you. So any questions or whatever, I'm here. So that's what I'll be doing. I'll be on the road, and then after those 2 months, we'll see what happens. Hopefully I start writing again.
Coming back to your book, what's fascinating to me is that you were able to frame up Katie's life in that one-year frame in 2007. Of course, that's when you wrote the book. Tell me, how did you come up with that concept? Because, you know, you heard about a day in the life of so-and-so. And then now you have a year in the life of so-and-so.
Yeah, you know, I guess for me, I had to get a handle on a novel. It's such a big enterprise. I wanted to start by at least defining the time frame. Mm-hmm. And, you know, seasons is, for me, it was a good place to start. Just having, I decided on a year time frame. I mean, there's some writers that can just cover hundreds of years, and I don't know how they do it. I really don't. I need to have sort of a concrete time frame, and I'd like it to be linear, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I decided, you know, this is going to be a year in the life, this, which is a pretty brief moment in time, if you know, but that's what it's going to be. It's going to be an intense year, and it's actually even less than a year. But, you know, there are some flashbacks, so it does cover a little more time. But I wanted to create, like, I'm all about sort of having immediacy and intensity. And so by having it sort of this finite period where I had to have everything dealt with within a year, that sort of forced me to force the urgency. Do you know what I mean? I had to make it everything happening quickly. It had to get resolved soon or else. So I wanted to have that urgency and that immediacy going on. And I think by having a limited time frame on it, sort of a ticking clock in my mind, allowed the book to be that way. And I think, you know, even my short stories can cover a lot of time too, but mine are always, I mean, it could be a 2-hour event, you know, it's really quick. So, but a lot happens in that time, you know. It's just because it's a short amount of, you know, physical time doesn't mean, could be a lifetime of sort of agony, could be, you know, a lot going on within that. So that's, I had to settle on a time frame first, and I think I was comfortable with a year, and it made it a little bit more, I could see the light a little better by knowing, okay, it's a year, let's see what happens, instead of going, all right, it's going to be 10 years where I'm like, oh my gosh, book will be 1,000 pages and I won't be done until 2020.
Right.
So that's how I came to that idea.
Interesting. We're coming close to the end of the show.
Okay.
Do you have a recipe for living you would like to share with our listeners this morning?
Wow. Well, I feel presumptuous offering a recipe for living, and what I would like is if anyone could call up and offer me a recipe for living. But I, you know, that a recipe for living changes on a daily basis, I would say. It depends on the events that are before me. For me, it's patience. That's always been my weak spot, and it's always been a challenge. And it's always caused me problems, and it's also resolved a lot of problems because I motor through things. So I'm working on being patient, and what's nice about having a 2-year-old is he's forcing me to be patient more than anyone ever has. I've been told by my mother, my wife, I need to be more patient, but with him, he's actually making me be more patient. So that to me, for me to, you know, be somewhat content, patience is everything. So that's my own personal recipe. Now, for anyone out there that's like me, restless, then they understand. But that's how I take it.
Wonderful. Any final thoughts on Call Me When You Land?
No, I mean, I hope, you know, I just really, I hope people can see that when they read it that I did, you know, it was a thoughtful endeavor. I put a lot of work into it, a lot of time. It's real, it's honest, and, you know, I hope people can see my intention and they can see the possibility, you know, within the book, and, you know, and that they could appreciate that. That's all I could hope, you know, and I'm thrilled that, I'm thrilled by anybody that reads it. You know, it's really rewarding. You know, to have other people read your work is it's a gift. You know, It's, you know, a lot of times you have to hand it to people and force them to read it. And the fact that someone out there is just going to buy my book and read it on their time is, it's very flattering and it's, you know, humbling, and I feel very lucky.
Great. Michael, when you look at the book, you know, we talk about this also just now in terms of the fact that there's always a little piece of you in each one of the character.
Yes.
Which one do you feel among the characters is the real you in the book?
Katie.
Okay.
Again, I guess that's why she ended up as the protagonist.
Right.
I think there might have been, at some point, I might have considered making the son, CJ,
right,
the protagonist.
Mm-hmm.
And you could argue he might be a protagonist as well, but Katie's the main character. It's,
mm-hmm,
the story's told really through her third-person limited voice.
Mm-hmm.
And I most identify with her because, for me, she's actually a projection of how I imagine. Like, I was, you know, I'll never be a 39-year-old woman, but
mm-hmm,
I was a 15-year-old boy.
Right.
So I know what I could obviously put myself in CJ's exact position.
Mm-hmm.
But I can only project Katie's feelings about what it's like to deal with someone like that. So it was kind of really getting to know the other side of that, like seeing how someone dealt, let me put it this way. So projecting how she dealt with her son is what got me close to her, because it was sort of figuring out how someone might have dealt with me.
Mm-hmm.
When I was young, when I was a teenager, like, because when you're a teenager, at least for me, I didn't think about anybody else. It was like, I didn't think about how my parents felt, really. You know,
yeah,
more about me and that strange time and what I needed, and, you know, and dealing with that. And so now, when I wrote this book, I'm writing about it from the parents' point of view. But it's projection, but it really helped me to understand and empathize with, you know, the mothers out there and parents in general that are dealing with such an erratic, strange being that's all of a sudden infiltrated their house, you know, for
mm-hmm,
that brief, strange time. So, I relate to Katie, too, because she's the artist and she's struggling with, am I an artist or what am I, and how do I make that work in my life, and how do I make money, and how do I raise a child, and, you know, and getting to that, you know, she's pushing 40. So I'm close to her age and I'm close to her feelings and desires. Again, I'm not a mother and I never will be, but I think I know her completely, you know,
mm-hmm,
and that's it's her, you know, that's what I'm closest to.
Wonderful. Michael, thank you again for being
thank
with
you,
us
Johnny.
This morning.
It's been my pleasure.
I mean, it's wonderful. Thank you for the great recipe for living and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guests will be the founders of New York's In Good Company, Adelie Lancaster and Amy Abrams. Since 2007, their company has been working collaboratively with women business owners in New York City. Currently, they support more than 300 entrepreneurs. Adelie, Amy, and I will be discussing about their life's journey and their new book titled The Big Enough Company, Creating a Business That Works for You. For additional information about this show, future shows, and to receive a free recipe for living, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com. Thank you for listening. Have a great week. Michael, thank you again, and have a great day. And congratulations again on your...
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.